Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by Patreon listeners like you. If you would like to join their ranks, go to patreon.com/rethebard. That's patreon.com/RITHEBARD. And follow Sherry on all the various social networks at RITHEBARD. That's RITHEBARD. And now, from the studios in San Diego, California, here's Sherry.
Thank you, Everett Robert. And today we're going to be discussing a book called Address the Color of the Sky with Jennifer Irwin. But first I wanted to remind everybody, the Chatty Award is coming up. Download nominees are counting on you to listen to their shows, to bring up their numbers to see who's going to win. And it's going to be announced on New Year's Day. So listen to the shows. Jennifer is a native New Yorker, and she is a published author. She also writes screenplays and short stories. And her new book, Address the Color of the Sky, is her first novel, and I'm very excited to have her on the show. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm very excited to
talking about
have you
my
on
book.
The show. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Please forgive my scratchy voice. I had laryngitis, so if I sound terrible, that's why. So Jennifer, tell us a little bit of, not like the entire story, but a little bit about yourself and your background.
Okay, well, I was raised on Long Island by a single mom, and I have a brother, and we both of us ended up going to boarding school, which I went to all-girls boarding school, and he went to all-boys, and I absolutely loved boarding school, and it gave me a chance to kind of get away from the chaos of my family life and then also have a really great education. I had a scholarship, so that was, you know, it was a really a big gift for me. And I went on to college, but I started writing in boarding school, and it was more of a creative school, so I was able to do a lot of writing, and that's sort of where I got the passion, and it all sort of started. And then I went on to college, and I studied film, and I wrote a screenplay in college, and ended up in an arts program in New York. And then I worked in advertising and industrial theater, and after I had my third son, I stopped working full-time and started teaching Pilates. And Pilates was a great way for me to get to know women and to learn a lot about how people think and what they want and need and create some of the characters and that have depth and stuff in my book. So I really enjoyed teaching Pilates. It was a great job for me to do while I was raising my kids.
That's wonderful. Do you still teach Pilates?
No, now I just write full time, and it was kind of a big step for me. But when I sold the film rights to my book, and I just decided to kind of take that leap of faith and just live the life of a writer, and I'm really enjoying it. I love it. I really do.
That's really cool.
Laying out my second book right now.
That's always interesting. Is it a continuation, or is it a whole different novel?
I'm sort of wavering back and forth. I'm mapping out two options. One would be a standalone sequel. A lot of people.
Jennifer?
So,
We lost you for a minute, so we didn't hear anything you said.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. I was just saying that on my Amazon, on the book, the people have written the reviews. They've basically said a lot of people want to see a sequel, a standalone sequel. So I'm kind of torn about that right now, and I'm going, I have two different ideas, so I just, I'm starting to write and see where it goes. But my heart wants to do a standalone sequel, but I'm not sure that's going to be the right thing to do. I'm just, you know, I'm a little bit torn on it. I know the film producer would like me to do that so they can do another movie. So
they can get a sequel out, of course. That's
exactly.
Lives for sequels.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I live in Los Angeles now, so which is really where I raise my kids, and so this is my home now. So it took me a long time to feel like it was home, but it does finally feel like home here. And the fires are, as you know, going on. So we're sending
the
out
hometown.
Good vibes to everyone. Yeah, it's really
it's
a hard time here
me
for
too.
A lot of people.
I'm so worried about, especially where it is. People don't realize how
mm-hmm.
central that area that's
mm-hmm.
on fire is.
Yeah.
I mean, Valencia was scary enough because I have a lot of friends in Valencia, but right
mm-hmm.
right by the 405 over the Getty where Brentwood and everything is, that's like
mm-hmm.
that's like access to both L.A. and the San Fernando Valley, and I was raised
mm-hmm.
in the San Fernando Valley. It's terrifying when the fires start going crazy in Santa Ana and Drive.
Yeah, that's really sad.
And
it's still, the winds are still howling.
I've been caught in that twice. And actually, we're under fire warning too. I live in San Diego, and
that's
lovely
terrifying.
Alert that comes on your phone.
Oh, I know. We had those last night. I was like, no, it's so scary. But
yeah,
I'm sending prayers out to everyone who's
me too.
In
I just
the
want
line of fire. Yeah.
And if you see any wildlife in your backyard, don't approach it, but put some water out because they're
mm-hmm.
tired and they're scared. So,
so
just put some water and maybe a little cat or dog food out. I mean, just so they feel like they're someplace, and then call the animal protection services to, especially if it's like a tiger or something.
Yeah.
Or a lion, mountain lion.
Yeah, I heard that they're going to be kind of seeking solace in people's yards. So, that's very sad.
I know. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to ask, I always ask authors, what was the first book that really touched you?
A Cricket in Times Square. And I must actually like sort of depressing books.
Jennifer, we lost you again. Can you hear me? She is in Los Angeles, everybody, so the fires and the high winds are probably affecting her phone line. Jennifer, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, there, you're back. Okay.
Okay, that's so weird. I've never had this happen to me during an interview. I'm really sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
But it could be the fires.
I just think it's the high winds and the fires and everything
mm-hmm.
that's
happening.
Yeah,
So basically, I was saying that I must like sort of sad books, but I had my son read it and he thought it was really depressing. But then the next book that I really, really love is Angela's Ashes, which is another very sad story. But yet I like seeing the resilience of the human spirit that
mm-hmm.
kind of uplifts me. And so there's kind of a theme there. And my book has some sad parts to it. So, which might be why I wrote it, and I'm drawn to those kinds of books. So, but yeah.
I think that the first book that I remember that really touched me when I was a little girl was called, The Bobbsey Twins.
Oh, I remember that book. Yeah.
That was
the
first one.
I
still have it. I wrote, you know how when you're little, because I was about four or five, I colored all over. I didn't color on any of the pages, where any of the writing is, but on the cover, you know, the inside cover, I colored all over it, and you see my little 5-year-old attempt to write my name, and it's hilarious.
Oh, that's really cute. Yeah, oh, that's fun. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how books can really have an impact on you as a young person, and I'm happy that my kids actually love to read and are and find solace in books, because I think reading is just a great thing to do. You can escape, you can learn, you can kind of see other worlds, and I love that about reading. Yeah, so that's neat though that you still have that book. I don't think I have very much left from my childhood. That's really cute though.
Books are always precious in my family, and I've moved all my life. I mean, I just recently moved from one part of San Diego to another, and I always move. But the first thing I pack are my books, because they mean so. And now I have my mom's and my dad's and my books, so it's just a lot of books.
Aww, that's neat. That's neat. I love hearing that. That's beautiful. So what do you like? What particular genre do you like to read?
Me? I like all different kinds. I was a murder mystery fan, and then my dad introduced me to science fiction. So, and then I also have an interest in biography. I'm a mess. I like classics.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? You're all over the map. Yeah, you're just a book lover. You love reading.
I am. I was just saying on Instagram, I go, I just finished all the Lord Peter Wimsey's and I want to change genres. Which one should I do?
That's cute. Well, I find myself now, because I write contemporary fiction, that I'm just reading a lot of contemporary fiction. So just because I think it's nice for me to see what best-selling contemporary fiction, what people are looking for and what kinds of stories are popular and what people are enjoying. So, and it's a genre I really like to read.
Also read a lot of books that people are bringing on the show. So I'm in the middle of an autobiography that someone sent me, and I started your book as well as, like I said, when I was sick, I go for my comfort books, and I was reading the Lord Peter Wimsey books, because I know it's murder mysteries, but there's just such a sweetness in that character that I just, like I said, it's a comfort book.
Aw, that's neat. That's good. See, books can do that. It's the coolest thing. That's what I love about reading. And then some people just love books on tape, too, you know. So it's just everybody's different. Do you read on a Kindle
read a book
at all,
whatever way you want to read a book.
Yeah,
I don't care
whatever
if
way you
an audio book or what. Just read.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
What do you think about the way one of the problems I have is that I've heard a lot of young people say, oh, I don't read. I play games and stuff like that. And they're proud of it. They just like, excuse me, sorry. They're proud of it. They're proud that they don't read. I mean, I'm like, that makes me so sad, because reading was is still my favorite escape and my favorite, like I said, my comfort. What do you think of that?
I think it's hard right now raising kids, because the computer is so accessible and there's so much for them to, they're so stimulated by the gaming and all the things going on the internet. And I think that it is sad, and it makes me worried that reading is a dying art. And I think that it's hard for people to sit and just be quiet and relax. And it's something that I actually have to practice doing, which is just kind of relaxing and allowing myself to have the guilty pleasure of sitting and reading a book and not feeling like that's being lazy, or not feeling like I have to be doing something else, you know, that's really important or whatever. I've tried to really encourage my kids to read, and they all really enjoy reading, and mostly they read fantasy and science fiction, but you know, the gaming is very, it's difficult to compete with such fast-paced, stimulating, you know, material versus sitting and reading a book. So I don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully, but I do see on Instagram a lot of people, young people, are avid readers, and I love seeing that. I mean, it just makes me so happy.
Yeah, that's one of the things I always like it. Like, I know a couple of young people who, one is going to be a reporter, and she's very good and very talented, but she loves to read. And then there's another young person who is a scientist, but she's a huge murder mystery buff. There's still young people who like to read out there, and I think that's the way it should be.
But I
also think it's like you're encouraging kids to read. My dad and my mom encouraged us to read. I mean, I think that's one of the, you know, you can't rely on the school system. You have to encourage your kids to read from a very, very early age. I mean, reading to your kids when they're going to bed a bedtime story, that's the beginning.
Yeah, no, I used to go to the library and get all the Caldecott award-winning books. And I would read so many books to my kids before they went to sleep. And some of my friends are like, that's crazy. Why don't you just read one? But they loved it. You know, they just loved hearing the story. And it's sort of, most kids' love languages is time. They want your time. And so when you read a story to a child, you're giving your time to them. And that's a very nice thing to do. Yeah.
Isn't that like your memory of your parents? It's like sitting around, either you in bed and your parents sitting on your bed reading you a story, or just sitting around talking about stuff like, you know, and remember sitting around the dinner table and talking about school and books and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have
they don't
as,
do that
as
nowadays.
Much of a conventional life. Well, I definitely had family meals when all my boys were home. I had Sunday night dinners, and we did a lot of talking. And now the family unit is a super important thing. And I think the meals are important, and talking about things and watching movies is a really big pleasure of my kids and I. We love to watch movies together and talk about the movies. And it's, you know, I think there's a lot of things that are important to do with your kids that are in the arts, reading and movies, and just learn. Even going to museums is a neat thing to do with kids. And, you know, even young little kids, there's all kinds of places you can go. We now have that Museum of Ice Cream, which is really cute here in L.A.
And children museums, but my parents not only took us to the children's museums, they took us to all the museums. I mean, one of my earliest museum memories was going to La Brea Tar Pits. I thought that was the most fascinating place in the world. You know, all the dinosaurs and seeing
it. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle of Los Angeles, too. So you're just like,
know,
oh, my God,
really
the dinosaurs
weird.
Were right in the middle of L.A.
Yeah, I've taken my kids there many times. They still love that kind of stuff. It's really funny. It's not easy being a parent, but we're all just doing the best we can. But
absolutely.
I think it's nice to read to your kids and to get them to love reading. And my oldest is the most of all my kids. He's the one that reads the most. And then it kind of went down from there. But I think I read to him the most because I only had one kid. And then when the third one came, it's harder and harder, you know. So, and he's the one that reads the least. You just never know. It's just funny how everybody's different, but, yeah.
Well, I also
I do.
Think that all that is, like, you know, they get their own thing. That's fine. But if they have the groundling to know about books and love books, it's always there. Even if they don't read as much as they did, they'll go back.
When I went to drop my youngest at college, they had like an orientation, and they some parent asked, "So what should we have our kids do this summer?" And the answer was read. That's all they should do is read. And I tried to tell my son that. And the thing is now he's doing a lot of reading because college is a lot of reading, a lot. and
yep.
he's having to suck it out. And yeah, and so the thing, you know, he's a great student, but he didn't find pleasure in reading, and now he's like, oh my gosh, there's so much reading. So yeah, no, it's good to practice reading and learn comprehension and just kind of learn how you can, you know, really absorb a story. You're going to need that.
It's funny because I had what I had to do in college, but I started writing as sort of like a way to relax between
mm-hmm.
studying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wrote poetry, I wrote short stories, I wrote fan fiction, but it was basically just a way to escape the studies just a little bit, just to.
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I started writing to heal from pain and personal pain. And I started writing again because I'd stopped for a long time. So yeah, I mean, I get that putting pen to paper and words down, and it has a very relaxing, healing quality to it. So yeah, that's interesting that you have that too.
It's one of my escape modes. Well, I still mm-hmm. do that. I still write fan fiction. I still write poetry. When my mother and my cat recently died, I only write poetry when I'm depressed. I'm not really sure why that is.
Aww. But it's an outlet in any way.
It is.
To get your feelings out is a good thing.
Yeah. Every time I have some kind of a tragedy or a problem, that's what I do. I write poetry.
Aww. Now, is it haiku, or do you have a certain kind that you...
It's whatever parts out of my head.
Yeah. I'm definitely not a poet. That's a tough one for me. But I very much admire poetry, and I love poetry, but I can't write it. That's a tough one. You got to really be good with your words. Very careful.
Yeah, but it's also, a lot of the poetry I write is basically stream of conscious. It's more like,
mm-hmm.
this is what my heart is saying right now, so that's what I write.
Aww.
I wrote a poem when my dad died. I wrote poems when my mom died. I even wrote poems when my cat died. I mean, that's how I get through it. For some reason,
yeah.
I mean, I write in my diary too, but for some reason, that is the way I get through it. It's weird because
I
don't write poetry any other time.
You have that. Yeah. You got to put an anthology together, put a book together of your poetry. And maybe it would help others who are going through hard times. You never know.
Poetry to be depressed by.
everybody has their genre. You know, I like depressing books. It's kind of like weird. It makes me feel better when I read about people having hard lives. I don't know why. It's kind of weird, but it's funny how,
I never really thought. I mean, I have published some very, the stuff that isn't too personal, even some that's personal, but the stuff that isn't too depressing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because, that actually is my heart. It's hard to do that. But I try not to be... It's like my father read some of my poems. He goes, "You're not this depressed, are you?" And I go, "No, that's what I write when I am depressed." And he goes, "Oh, it's an outlet. Oh, okay."
He was like all worried.
Yeah.
You're like, "No, this is just makes me feel better." That's funny.
Yeah, I remember that. I was in my 20s, and he said, "Can I read some of your poetry?" I go, "You really want to?" He goes, "Yeah." I go, "Okay." And then you're not really this depressed, are you? First thing out of his mouth after he read it.
That's cute.
We're at the point where I want to give you free rein to talk about your book and the upcoming events that you have that's coming up, whether it's a live event where people can come and get your book signed, or an online event where people can meet you online. The floor is yours.
Oh, okay. Well, I will tell you that I'm very very encouraged by the reviews that are coming in. I have 4.9 stars on Amazon right now, and 25 reviews have come in. So, and on Goodreads, I have 4.78 stars. So the book's being very well received, and people find it consistently. The reviews are saying it's a page turner. It made me think. It made me feel. I related to.
Jennifer? Jennifer, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi, I lost you again.
Oh,
sorry.
Geez, it's so wet.
It's not even flickering on my thing. You're solidly there. It's just like there's like a sudden interference. And I really think it's the wind right now on both sides.
Yeah, it probably is. I don't even know where he lost me, but my book goes back and forth in time, and Prince Alsh is a sex addict, and the way that you see her childhood, you start to empathize with her and see the things that she's been through and how she's survived a lot. And she's been through a lot, and that creates a sense of understanding her bad behavior, understanding how she ended up the way she is, and so people are learning, I think, a lot about sex addiction. They're learning a lot about child trauma and how to heal from that. And then there's the cast of characters in rehab. So I like to say my book is Girl Interrupted meets Orange is the New Black. So it's very, the characters in rehab are very relatable. It's good to see how a treatment center works, how does a rehab program work. And then I have the smoking veranda because all addicts kind of they're seeking solace there. And Prudence is not a smoker, but she sits there because that's where they can talk without people hearing. And her addiction's men, and men are everywhere. So for her to be in rehab with that, where there's men, proves to be difficult. And then she has a counselor who is sort of her great Oz, the person that is advising and mentoring her. And then she has a minor slip up. I learned a lot about how treatment works and how people go through recovery. And I became very interested in childhood and how that affects your relationships and your self-worth and your self-esteem. And Prudence goes through a journey of self-love and putting her childhood behind her. And she thinks when she checks in that she wants Nick, her husband, to get back together. They're separated. And in the end, it's not really what she wants. She realizes that that's not what she really wants. So, but I leave the end sort of hanging, so you don't really know whether or not and what's going to happen. She has a minor slip up in rehab, but people say she's an extremely relatable character, and they really root for her, and they cry and they laugh and they yell. The reviews are just, I've been floored, honestly. I've been thrilled and floored by how consistently people say it's a page turner, and they read it in a few sittings. Like, it's that quick to read. So I'm excited to share it with the world. And everything that's going on right now in Hollywood, started in Hollywood, now it's going into politics and it's going into businesses and dot-coms, and women are coming forward that they've been harassed. My book is my book's extremely timely. And something I learned when I was researching the book is that when you see yourself as a victim, you end up in situations in which you're victimized. And so Prudence has to get that sense of being a victim and shed it, and she has to get rid of it. And there's a process to doing that. And it's been really interesting for me to see the variety of women, the different women that have come forward. And I ask myself, would I have been brave enough to say, I'm not going up to that hotel room when the most powerful man in Hollywood says there's a meeting going on? and there's a boardroom, so you don't think you're just going to his room. You know, there's a lot of things where I don't know if I could have made a different decision or a better decision, and I empathize with a lot of these women because it's really hard.
And
they're brave, and
I
admire
understand
them
that.
Too. So.
I do. I think that's very brave, especially for not the big stars, but the actresses who are not big stars, but they're working actresses coming forward.
And they're trying to make it.
That's really scary to do that. Because it could be a career killer.
And my mom was a big executive. Yeah, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. Go ahead. Your mom, go ahead.
I just remember as a young girl, my mom was commuting, and she was one of the only moms that really had a very intense full-time career. And she commuted on the train to New York. And I remember her getting harassed and her telling me, that somebody on a business trip was knocking on her hotel room door. And as an adult now, I can see the ramifications of how traumatizing that would be for my mom, who passed away a long time ago. But I see that this has been going on. The story has been going on for a very long time. And I'm thrilled women are putting a stop to it. I really am.
Do you realize that the casting couch goes back to the actor managers of the ancient times that used to travel with shows around England and America? I mean, they basically, if you were a young actress wanting to break through an all-male world, you were liable to get caught into the casting couch at that time.
Oh,
I mean, it goes back that far. I believe started in the late 18th century. So I mean, and that's known. This is known history. It probably goes back further than that. And I'm sure harassment of women, from what I've read, I'm a history buff, has been around forever. I mean, it's just from the beginning of time. Unless it was a matriarch society, which are few and far between.
Mm-hmm. And it just puts my book in a very timely position and in a place where it's an important story. And it shows how these situations and these experiences really affect you and how they affect your life and how they affect your relationships. And your self-worth. And people hold this pain inside them for long years and years. And some of the women coming forward, it happened a long time ago, and they've just been sitting on this agonizing pain. And this is really what my story is about. So I'm happy the timing of my book is amazing, but at the same time, I'm sorry that this is the way our society is going. But the producer who bought the film rights is a woman, and I think it's going to be a great time to be producing a film as a woman in Hollywood. I think that this is the timeliness of that's awesome as well. And it's going to be a lot of highly respected situation where the women they're going to be able to make a great film, and they're going to have they're going to command some very good respect to do it. I love that. I love them. So I'm happy that there's a female executive producer, and she was very much moved by the story and felt that it was a universal story and it was a very relatable story, which is why she wanted to buy the film rights to it. And when I was writing the book, Kelly Oxford tweeted her sexual assault story and millions of women. And she asked women to share theirs, and millions of women shared their assault story. And that was really horrifying to me, to know there had been so many women who had endured that. And this is what happens to Prudence Aldrich. So this is why she's in the situation she's in. And everybody handles trauma differently. So and that's all sort of in the book, and how you heal from that and the process of healing from that. And art therapy and music therapy and those kinds of things that go on. And then there's the poignant childhood that she has that's painful, yet at the same time, she's a fighter, she's strong, and you see her as that strong person, which is why you root for her. Yeah. So, and I love talking about my books, so thank you for asking me to talk about my books. My favorite thing to talk about, of course, right?
No problem. But we don't have a lot of time, so I wanted, do you have any events that people can come see you at, or is there anything online happening?
I just got back from book tour, which was really exciting. I'm going to be, the film producer is having an event in Sun Valley, and I'll be announcing the date for that. It's going to be very soon. So if you're in Idaho and you're in that area, keep an eye out for that on my Facebook page or my author site, and I post everything on Goodreads as well. And then I'm doing a book signing in Florida and on Marco Island. I'm going to be visiting and speaking with a big book club there, and then I'm doing an event in an art center. And all that's going to be put on my wall. And I'm hoping to be going to Miami and the St. Petersburg area as well, so when I'm in Florida. And then I'll be hitting New York, and I'll be hitting the Rye Greenwich area and Long Island. So, and all that will be on my website.
And can you give us your website, please?
Oh, jenniferirwinauthor.com. And I love talking to book clubs. I'm going to be a guest at a book club on a week from today here in L.A., and I'd love calling into book clubs and Skyping in and talking to people who are reading my book. So if you have a book club, and my book actually is book club discussion points in the end, and it's a perfect book club read. So if you have a book club, I Skype me in. I'll talk about the book, and you guys can ask questions. I love doing that kind of stuff. I'm really available and open, and I love talking to my fans and the people that read the book.
Cool. Run out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it. thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by listeners like you. You can support this program by leaving a rating or a review at iTunes, at Sherry's Patreon account, patreon.com/readthebard, or by following Sherry on all the various social media at readthebard. That's RITHEBARD. Once again, that's readthebard. RITHEBARD. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.